It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am doing fine this morning. It's a glorious day. It's going to be warm, all the rest of it. This has been an interesting week. We had one particular meeting, a city council meeting that we could probably start talking about, and then
that was a doozy. A segue
into other stuff. I was there, and I believe you were listening. So what did you hear?
Well, I heard that everybody was present. That's always good, though, when they start out with a full council. I like to acknowledge that. The attorney was on the phone, but other than that, everybody was in their seats, and I always think that's a good way to start out. They had a couple of proclamations, Mike. You were there to witness, and one was having to do with the Palmer High eSports team for their achievement in a national competition and a recognition of Education and Sharing Day.
Right.
They approved on the consent agenda an introduction of an ordinance that amends the code having to do with roving vendors and retitling it to itinerant vendors. And I looked through that a little bit. They didn't get any confirmation or they didn't have any discussion on it, but there were a few little changes there that are kind of significant. The mayor confirmed another seat to the planning commission, a person by the name of Casey Peterson. There was no discussion about that. Then they went on to the manager's report, which didn't have a whole lot of information, letting us know the street sweepers are out, which was great. I was hearing them all night last night. They had some problems. They had some problems getting off the dime this year with some broken equipment. But boy, I heard them. You live downtown too, Mike. You must have heard them too.
Well, they do. It's an interesting. It's a difficult job to run. And the machine. It's not like having a little vacuum cleaner. You have to run and. And they're doing a couple of things at the same time. I mean, they're sweeping up the dust, but they're also attempting to keep the dust down so that it's not blowing. What's being swept up doesn't also get blown all over the place.
And I think the last meeting, the manager mentioned the fact that there's a lot more gravel this year because of the ice, and that they had applied a lot more, and there was more dust, and it was, you know, they're working hard to get it up. So it looks. Things are looking pretty spiffy this morning, so that's always good.
And it's a little bit in their defense, too, because once, and I've watched them work, once you have any traffic and cars parked along the road, et cetera, it's really tough to do any of that work. So they try to do it early on when we all know that there's much traffic, but there might be a few people still sleeping, you're right.
Yeah, and well, it's the same thing with snow removal, you know, it's a challenging job. He talked a little bit about airport construction at the Airframe Alaska is retrofitting or moving into a 10,000 square foot building out at the airport. So that's pretty exciting. The Palmer Golf Course, this is amazing, Mike, should be open for 18 holes this weekend, walking only. But that's got to be a very early date, even in the record books, I would think.
Right.
He wanted to let people know he's taking a vacation after a long period of time. He hasn't taken one. He'd be gone for a month. And he's appointing
Lance
Ketterling, right. Ketterling to take over in his stead. So they've got other directors, but he will now be gone until after Memorial Day. So they had their chance. But then they went into audience participation, Mike, and I think you and I can both talk about this. They had a lot for them, quite a few audience participation. One had to do with the Palmer Spring Classic that's coming up. It's a bike race. It's seventh year bike race. It's starting in Palmer in front of Vagabond, going will end at on the green behind the Palmer Ale House.
It's right.
Up 65 and 100 miles. It's quite a ride. They have 9 volunteers working on it, and Dr. Joe Valerius is there. Talking about, explaining about it, and supporting a resolution that was on the agenda later on the agenda that was, in fact, for $1,000 that was
requested to support
requested
that.
And
right.
The only other thing, and then we'll get to the big thing, Mike, was Stephanie Allen from United Way was there. This was kind of really good news that she had worked with a couple other nonprofits, and they've secured money, $13,000 for enhancement and lighting and improvement in the amusement park over, I'm assuming, by the Moose Lodge is what they're talking about.
Yes, actually, it's that one, right.
A couple of different parks they'll be able to kind of spruce up, but five different light poles. They've had some challenges over there with kind of just being a dark place at night, and so they're going to do some tree clearing. They're going to put some lighting up. That was pretty exciting. That's a huge
and there had been some earlier discussions or other meetings have been that the had been some concern about not only being dark but perhaps that it had become a gathering place because it was a little bit out of sight for activities that the amusement park wasn't intended for. And the police, it was reported, have been spending a little more time around that area as well. But the lights, I know, will make a huge difference. Yeah.
Yep, that's what you do. You bring good behavior in, drive bad behavior out. So and people will be able to, you know, enjoy it longer into the day and that sort of thing. So good for United Way, good community partner in bringing that in. And then the rest of the testimony, Mike, was, as you know, all about short-term rentals.
Right.
You've sort of been in the forefront of that. Do you want to give the interview for that overview?
I will. I had reviewed the agenda prior to the meeting start, and I read through a number of things. One, to keep people really focused on what was coming up, there had been a review of an already passed ordinance that dealt with short-term rentals. And there's a matrix out there that shows what can and can't be done in different parts of the city. We're zoned variously from residential through a variety of residential types and commercial and so on. And this had gone through a lengthy process with the Planning Commission as well as with the City Council. And it was done and passed, and there had been some people who liked one part or another, but ultimately it passed and went into the books. Well, it came back because there had been a further look, and in particular it was a look at what is referred to as the R1, residential areas. And it was thought that rather than saying no, you could not have a short-term rental there, that should be CUP, and CUP stands for conditional use permit. And so the discussion was whether to change that section for a couple of the versions of short-term rental that exist to a conditional use permit. Well, one would have thought you had stirred up a wasp's nest, I think.
Strong opinion.
Right. I've spoken in favor of it briefly myself. I thought, yeah, this seemed to be fine. But there was testimony, both testimony and commentary by someone in the audience as well as a member of the council, really speaking in a negative way as to this being a bad thing to do. There was something of a staff report, and there was also some commentary by the attorney who was on the phone. And what was missing, I thought, and it would have short-circuited much of the ongoing discussion, was a simple map, a graphic up above, where you looked and said, okay, we're talking about R1 lots. Now, R1 lots aren't the majority of the land area in the city, and they're identifiable. They're on the map, and it's color-coded. But more importantly, one or two of the features of the CUP was that you had to have a lot that was a certain size. So you could immediately look at the map and say, well, all of these lots don't qualify. They're not of a size so that
was
you can...
20,000
square feet. That's a big lot. That's a half acre. That's a half acre. And so when you... And I'm aware, and there were other people aware, but rather than starting with that and saying, okay, we're talking about something that applies to these lots. These are the only lots that we're talking about for this change. The discussion went on as if all of the R1 lots would be potentially subjected to this. And I think that's where why it became confusing. I want to give credit here, full credit, to Councilman David Fuller,
because he was looking at this and listening, and he pulled up on his own computer and screen the imagery of the lots, and he attempted, you know, a quick look. He said, well, it doesn't look, you know, there are only a few of these that it applies to. But I think that was, in retrospect, and it's easy to think back at something like this, a staff report that would have started that way would have focused this discussion and say, okay, we've got X number of lots that this applies to, and they're only over here. So if people have been, and the suggestion was there had been signing a petition, there were people who were calling at least one member or more of the council and saying we're concerned about this, to be able to say, well, don't worry, it doesn't apply to you, and go on from there. Or yes, it's in your area, but it's a conditional use permit. And as was attempted to be pointed out in a number of times and ways, it's a conditional use permit that requires a whole bunch of things to happen. And that was my read about it. So what did you hear? I'm curious, because you were on.
Yeah. So we've both been following this. We're not unusual in the fact that people are looking into this because housing, there's a demand for housing, particularly in Palmer. There's not a lot of rental housing, number one, but there's a new development called Airbnb and Vacation by Owner, and people who are getting to a stage in their life that they have some extra room, as one pretty elegant testifier talked about. He had a 5-bedroom house, 3-bathroom house that he thought, you know, he loves the community, wants to stay in it, and doesn't want to have a year-round renter in it because he wants his own privacy. There's a lot of family coming in and out, but he felt that it would be great to be able to, number one, supplement his income, and two, be able to offer some housing for some sports teams that come around that have kids often looking for places to stay, and they're on a budget. He's got plenty of parking. Parking is always, I think, an issue that needs to be looked at, really one of the next issues, Mike, because it's a holdup of a lot of things, that people love to have their parking. It's overemphasized as a requirement in what should be a walkable community, but that's kind of another topic. But that certainly was Councilwoman Combs's, who was strongly against this.
That's Linda Combs, right?
Linda Combs, right. Very strongly against this. She kept harkening back to the fact that she'd lived in her house for 31 years, and that wasn't the rules when she moved in, and it shouldn't be the rules now. And, you know, I don't, you know, all respect to Ms. Combs, I don't know anything that hasn't changed in 31 years, and you don't get to pick your neighbors. She could have, I don't know how many neighbors she's had in 31 years. Maybe she hasn't had a change, but normally you don't get to interview who buys the house next door. So you're going to have change. There hasn't been any problems up to this point. And as you said, the impact is pretty minimal to Palmer. It's still a pretty strict law that you have to go file for a conditional use permit. You have to wait. You have to go through a process. So somebody has to really want to do it. I think Mr. Fuller also made a good point, and as did Sabrina Combs, who was fully in support of this. The city can use the revenue. And these short-term rentals produce good revenue for the city. We're at a time that we need to be looking at revenue, because the state's made it clear they're not going to be part of the revenue stream as much as they used to be. So we do have to look at doing things differently. You're going to hear the sweet super here, Mike. So all in all, it was quite a long conversation,
right?
A close vote at the very end.
Oh yeah, 4-3. It did pass 4-3, and there was one other aspect that I've been looking forward to.
So we should probably say who that is: Sabrina Combs, who was heartily for it; Pete LaFrance; Julie Burbrick;
and Dave Fuller.
And David Fuller, who were for it, and then the mayor, Linda Combs, and Steve Carrington. Steve Carrington actually wanted to postpone it to give it more time, and that failed on a 4-3 vote too. They wanted to get it done.
Okay, so here's the one feature that I was fascinated with, and that was a reading, an interpretation of references to how long you could rent to someone for a short term. And I listened carefully, and it's all about 30 days. And there was a reference to a 30-day period being a short-term rental.
But there was not a clear answer. In fact, the attorney was asked for his opinion about it. He spoke, but I'm not sure when he was finished. I clearly understood whether that meant that if you were doing short-term rentals, you only had 30 days in a year, or that you could rent to a person for 30 days. And that person, if they tried to come back later, was not going to be able to do it. Or whether you were limited to 30 days and not 365 days, one day rentals in the year.
So the word consecutive was kind of missing there.
Right. And I listened to the discussion. That discussion about that feature went on for a long time. And then finally, at the end, in the comment, after a question was asked, well, what does this mean? Does it mean only 30 days? Or does it mean that you have to limit a rental to one party for 30 days, but then you can rent to 11 more parties for 30 days as well? And it was Councilman Pete LaFrance who said, in his understanding of what the discussion was, you could rent throughout the year. You were not limited to only 30 days rental for a short-term rental in a year. But when he spoke to that, my sense was that the mayor was just as a little bit unclear as others. And I am waiting to see whether there will be any further discussion, because I kept hearing as they were talking, this is subject to interpretation. And that was not encouraging to say, well, this is really clear. So what was your sense of that?
Yeah, that was a bit confusing. I would kind of sort of thinking there's some cleanup language coming, because it is a little, I was kind of lost in the merry-go-round of the attorney comments too. And I think it does need to be clearer to people, because if it's not, it'll be challenged. I think, you know, these things need to be spelled out in code very clearly. So I wonder if there won't be some just technical cleanup language come back at some point about it. But I'm with you, Mike, in that we are a visual society, and it was a really good lesson, or it should be, for the community development director, who once did sit on the assembly or the council, to have those things available when you're taking on something like this. Because it's all well and good to have a chart that says, you know, R1, R2, you know, semi-commercial, but give us the lay of the land. Let us look at the impact where that is, because honestly, people rarely know what they are. Ms. Combs does, because she's intimately involved in it. The testifier before also sat on the council, so he was too. But it's not common that people know exactly what their zoning code is. So I think you were spot on when you kicked off with that, saying, and people need to be able to see that.
Right. Well, there's also one other piece to it as well. The City Council and the Planning Group are going to have a joint meeting next week, and it's something people should probably pay attention to. We may well be there streaming and recording that session because it's so significant. They're continuing work on what's referred to as Title 17, which not only includes the short-term rentals, but also the accessory dwelling units or longer-term rentals, because that's another part of this whole thing that is moving toward completion. Once you have a place in your house that is suitable for a short-term rental, it may also be suitable for a longer-term rental. And at the present time, that's not possible in the city. You can't have a separate little facility that you rent to someone who is either younger or older or needs only a smaller place but is needing a place for more than 30 days. And there seems to be a kind of disconnect to say, well, what specifically is wrong with doing that? As what's magic about 30 days? If the facilities requirements in terms of parking and structure and all the rest of it are the same, what's the difference in impact? If I, you know, rent to 10 or 11 people 30 days at a time, or I rent to one person for the year? And that question, I think, is the one that needs to be answered.
Well, I hope to have a map And it's interesting. I was just looking to put that on my radar too, Mike, because I do think it's an important subject. It's not just about renting out and about that portion. It's about having another place for maybe a caregiver to live on your property, but not in your house, or, a kiddo that needs to come home after college and have some place to live before he goes into a job. So those ADUs can be used for multiple things. So the ADU provisions in a city are really, really important and becoming more so these days. And again, it's sometimes the answer to a limited housing market. And so I'm interested about that. I'm looking on their webpage, and I don't see the agenda for that posted.
No, hopefully that'll happen soon. Yeah.
Yeah, which means it should have been noticed by now. So it's a little odd, but it could be. The city is going to have an upgrade in their website shortly, so it just may not have gotten moved over. But there's an assembly meeting that night as well, so I'm a little torn, but it's important to me to hear the conversation. But yeah, City of Palmer, if you're listening, have a map. Let us know where those ADUs can go.
Okay. Anything else, Citizen Lobbyist?
Not that I can think of. I did want to do a little plug here and a little shout out too. I just got to get caught up on Ag Matters that was recorded yesterday that you put up, Mike, on.
Right.
And it was interviewing the two Palmer teachers at Palmer High who do the ag program there.
Right.
And if people didn't get a chance to listen to it, it's really an interesting show, and it's just amazing. I mean, 200 kids they've got now in the Future Farmers of America program, and they're teaching welding along with regular agricultural stuff, and it's really it was always a good program. Don Berwick always did a good longtime teacher there, did a great job there for many years, and I was a little skeptical when they brought back two teachers for that position, but boy, are they making the most of it, and the program's growing. And with all the news that we've had this week about the dairy farm and the budget, and farming is kind of on the forefront here. So it's bravo on that, and if folks get a chance to look back on that, it's on the website, and I would highly recommend you spend a half hour listening to Amy's program, because it's a great job. It's good every week, but I think particularly timing is good on it right now, so encourage people to listen to that. And other than that, Mike, the Metro Borough has a early planning commission meeting themselves at 4 o'clock on next Tuesday, and they also have their regular meeting, which should be lively. And after that, you start with a whole series of discussions about the budget.
Right. It's going to be a busy time. Well, thank you. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. Have a good week.
Right.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.